Big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It's Thursday, the 5th of June. I'm Marie Crow and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, John Fallon and Rebecca Cray discuss a very busy week in international football. More on that with Heimer Hell Grimson shortly. Plus, there's some interesting ties from today's FAI Cup draw. In rugby, Bernard Jackman looks at Paul O'Connell's Irish squad for the summer tour. Plus, there's Connacht's coaching coup and Stuart Lancaster's new job heading west. All of that, plus Jeff Shepherd sets up for tip-off in the NBA Finals. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 515-552, WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200 or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
Game On.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that Rebecca Cray is with me in studio. John Fallon is also going to step in momentarily. Rebecca, I'm going to go to you first. It has been a really busy week in international football. The dust has just about settled now on the Porky Cueve game, Ireland and Slovenia, with Ireland coming away with that 1-0 win. But unfortunately, they didn't top Group B. That went to Slovenia. Ireland had to settle for second spot. They have a playoff coming up. We'll know tomorrow who the opponents are. The playoff isn't until October. But just as we look back on that campaign under Carlo Ward, how do you reflect on it, Rebecca?
Yeah, I think it was probably a better window of the camps in recent times. You know, looking at the game there on Tuesday night, you know, really intense from the get-go, you know, looked purposeful, you know, tight-knit, aggressive, and showed a real kind of, you know, incentive to go and win the game. Really impressed by how the girls performed. Unfortunately, obviously, didn't get the score line we needed, but it was definitely promising and, you know, looked like a good build phase for what's to come.
John Fallon has also stepped into the studio. John, are we seeing Carlo Ward's identity now in this Ireland team?
Eventually, I think, yeah. It's probably taken six games because there's been a lot of changes of personnel. You even see Saoirse Noonan there getting, you know, her first competitive start and goal. So she's really sort of put herself in the frame for the friendlies in America and also the playoffs. So I think I was in Cork at the match and listened to Carla afterwards. I think she realises it was probably, you know, a more assessment phase than anything, particularly when we lost 4-0 in Slovenia. It was always going to be an uphill task to get that fourth spot. So, we're getting more of an identity, which in her way, as you said, the Carla Ward way, and then the Irish way, sort of off the ball, which is, as we saw by conceding a couple of chances, you know, that's still a problem, I think, that she's trying to rectify.
Yeah, but Rebecca, when you look at the increase of intensity and that aggression as well that Ireland seemed to bring and the work off the ball, out of possession, is that what we need to see more of, do you think?
Yeah, most definitely. Look, I think we have it in bags full, but it's just known, you know, when to go, when not to go. And I think, as John mentioned there was a few chances in the first half that Slovenia could have, you know, came back at us. And thankfully, Courtney Brosnan, when called upon, you know, made a great save in the first half. But yeah, look, it's just tightening up, you know, how we perform off the ball. I thought they were a little bit better on the ball. You know, they create a lot of chances, retained good possession. And unfortunately, you know, just weren't as clinical as probably they should have been in front of goal. You know, like Emily Murphy had multiple chances. I know Kira Caruso had one in the first half as well. And look, thankfully Saoirse Noonan, I think she can be quite happy with how she performed and getting her goal in her hometown.
Is that the next piece of jigsaw, Rebecca, to try and finish those chances, to be more clinical?
Yeah, you have to be. Look, you can put in the best performances you can at these stages, but you need to be clinical and take those chances because they are few and far between at this level. You know, and we've seen, you know, there was great patterns of play at times with Abby Larkin going at defenders. You know, she's getting stuck in as well on the physical side of it. Emily Murphy, I think she was a threat all game. You know, going forward, she was pacey and, you know, aggressive. Again, she could have had two or three goals, which is something that hopefully will be worked on in coming camps.
So tomorrow is D-Day. John will know who they're going to be playing in that tricky playoff in October. Denmark, Belgium, Iceland and Austria are the four potential opponents.
Yeah, they are all seeded above us, as you'd expect from League A, but not that much above us. Belgium are 20th, Austria 18th, Iceland 13th, and then Denmark are 12th, but probably Denmark are the one you want to avoid. I know Sweden beat them 6-1, I think, during the week, but Sweden are, as we saw in the last campaign, an excellent team. So we wouldn't know for sure, but you'd probably take Austria or Belgium of those four options.
And you would think there'd be lessons learned from playoffs as well?
Yeah, you would think so.
After Wales?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, God, that's still haunting, as Denise O'Sullivan said. But you can go back to Hampden Park and think of that one rather than the more recent one, or even back in Iceland back in 2008 on the ice.
Which many of the girls refer to, actually. Like, you hear that coming up when they just missed out and get to the Euros in that one. Yeah. It is going to be a busy few weeks for this Ireland team and for Carla Ward. They're going to be heading off to the USA for a couple of friendlies. We know Katie McCabe isn't going. She's going on a very well-deserved holiday. She's had an absolutely crazy busy year, finishing it off with that Champions League medal, which was amazing for her. What do you want to see from Ireland when they do head off to America squad-wise? And especially, Rebecca, you know, when I know how much you've got your finger on the pulse on Irish football here and who's coming through. Like, is there people that should be included? Should she be including more maybe around the fringes to develop players within Ireland and give them that carrot that, you know, you might get a chance?
I think so. And I think that's probably on her mind. You know, I think that's probably going to be something that she will look to do to bring, hopefully, you know, a lot more of our League of Ireland players into the fray. You know, the likes of Ellen Malloy has been fantastic for Wexford, you know, nearly carrying them on her own at times this season. And there's multiple girls throughout the league that are within a chance of a call up. And I think, you know, given that she has to probably rest the likes of Katie, she's played over, you know, what, 12,000 minutes in the Champions League and multiple, obviously, games in our domestic league, and the likes of Denise as well. You know, obviously, she's based in the States. She probably will go, but there is multiple girls throughout that squad will definitely get a well-deserved rest. But I'd like to see a lot more youth coming through, you know, across the Women's National League, obviously, will be something I'd be looking for.
Yeah, John, any word on anyone else not going? And what would you like to see from Carla Ward's side now that we've got a little bit of a glimpse of that identity?
Yeah, I don't think anyone individually was mentioned. They were probably, you know, going out of their way not to name anyone, because I think Katie had volunteered that information herself on the eve of the match. You probably look at the players who had busy WSL seasons and they could take a rest. But it will...
It's attractive though, isn't it?
That's world number one, you know.
You put your hand up to go, no matter what.
So for that alone, you know, I don't think you're going to have many cry-offs. Mm-hmm. Katie, I think, is an exceptional case. And it turns out, had she gone, she would have won her 100 cap in the second game. So that's probably going to happen now
amazing,
in the playoff.
Amazing to do in America,
98 caps now.
Yeah, she's so close. And Rebecca, Louise Quinn hung up the boots. An emotional send-off for her. Lovely, actually, to see. So well-deserved. A stalwart for this Ireland team. Do you think we'll see her around the camp, though, maybe in some sort of a leadership role? Or what can you see her doing?
Yeah, it was a fantastic send-off for Louise. Look, I was delighted to see her get back in this camp, you know, just to give her that kind of recognition, something she deserved, obviously, given the commitment she's had to the international side of things over the last few years. But, yeah, I think, you know, I can't see Louise going away just yet. You know, there's been talk of maybe a leadership role, knocking about the team and just keeping her in the dressing room and just being that presence, you know, of full of advice, full of knowledge, experience. It does go a long way. So I'd like to think that she might stick around for a little bit longer yet.
John, there's so much talk heading into this window about that leadership void, and it was again the players that were volunteering that information that they felt that there was maybe a bit of a lack of it within in and around the squad because of so many retirements, the Nifahis, Louise obviously gone, Dayal Caldwell, Julianne Russell, even though she was only kind of in, but she's still a big presence. Do you think that's still an issue?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when you go from the squad that was in America, you know, 2 years ago to now, what you've named, like, a clatter of players there, and it's bound to have an effect. Now, I know some of them, like Diane, didn't play that much towards the end, but you now have someone like Megan Connolly, who's 27, who's now a senior member of the squad. So you have a lot of that generation, that squad who went to the Euros or the under-19s, that group who are now probably the leaders of the group. So it's there. The new responsibility was going to be on them. It was going to take a bit of time. You know, the main time is going to be the playoff, that we can get into that top 16 for the World Cup qualifiers next year, which means you're guaranteed a playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be an important time for Carla Ward now over the next few months, that she develops a squad to hopefully get to a major tournament. There is one happening this summer, though, and we can't ignore it. Even though we're not there, it is going to be on RTE. All of the games will be on the different platforms. Exciting time for women's football. And today was the day that Serena Wiegmann revealed her England squad for these upcoming Euros. So she's named a 23-player squad. A lot of eyebrows raised, some young players getting their opportunity, some senior players not going to be there. A lot of reliance really on Lauren James and her fitness because she's such a big player. What's your takeaways from her squad, Rebecca?
Yeah, looking at that, look, it's, you know, as I mentioned to you off air, there's 13 out of the 23 from the winning side in 2022 still involved. You know, so there is still got, they still do have a wealth of experience in there. Obviously, the likes of Grace Clinton, Jess Park make up that midfield now when, you know, previously, obviously, the likes of Jill Scott would have been involved back in 2022. You know, you still have, obviously, Lauren Hemp back in there. Chloe Kelly got back in. Obviously, I think she'd be delighted given that she made the move back to Arsenal. And obviously, Beth Mead as well. But yeah, look, it's an exciting side. You know, they have got that kind of balance there of the experience with the Lucy Bronzes, you know, Leah Williamson's. Lotta Will McMoy made her case as well. But the likes of Michelle, I'm never going to pronounce this right. I'll leave it to you, Marie. But from Arsenal, she only, I think, signed a pro contract with Arsenal this time last year. And now she's in the Euros squad, which she can only be delighted with that. And obviously Aggie Beaver-Jones is another one that I'd be excited to see this summer.
Yeah, they have an exciting squad for sure. So that's Michelle Aguiman, and she was out on loan with Brighton. She only had a really short spell playing for the England team, but she did make her mark, just 40 seconds on the pitch, and she scored an absolute cracker. So she's that wild card that you need. We're going to be building up and covering and analysing all of these Women's Euros games throughout the summer as well. So much to look forward to there. The Sports Direct FAI Cup draw was made today as well. Standout ties, Rebecca? Who did you get?
Shelburne got the lovely Galway at home. Yeah, so we'd be glad we won't need to travel anywhere. So yeah, it'll still be a very, very tough game though.
Yeah, because this is the one that people want to win, isn't it, Rebecca? Like you just got to get going and head down and try and not fall at any hurdles.
Most definitely. This is the big day out at the end of the season. You know, everyone looks to that fixture and wants to be involved in the last day. And yeah, look, it's great to obviously see. I think this time round you have all teams involved when previously, you know, it would have been a case of the finalists coming in the latter rounds. But yeah, it's definitely geared up to be a good affair in the next few weeks.
And the second round men's one, John, lots of ones that you kind of want to go and watch, and I'm not sure why, but like I would like to go and watch Drogheda United and Crumlin. I would like to see Bray Wanderers and Wayside Celtic, Fairview Rangers, Shelburne. There's a lot of great ties for the small clubs.
Yeah, unlike previous years, it's not a lot of tough flight clashes in the at this stage, so it was unusual in that sense. But yeah, you say there's a number of curious ties, appetizing ties that you said there. You've Colester, Donnycarney against Bohemians, Northside Dublin Derby, and then you have St Mochtas, fresh from winning the Leinster Senior League only last night. They're going down to Waterford, and I was at the draw today, so you had the sight of Liam Brady, not the older one, the younger one, who plays for St Mochtas, but is also the brother of Robbie Brady.
Oh.
And Robbie was there to make the draw.
Brilliant.
So it was a nice picture to get the two of them.
Yeah, great excitement. And look, it's for some players, it's the only time they'll ever get to have these big games and to play against players that they would only just be looking up to as well.
Yeah, like again, sometimes you get in these rounds, you get a lot of non-league ties, and they just end up sort of eliminating each other. But yeah, there's lots of them there. You know, St. Pat's are playing University College Cork. You've got Leicester Celtic, you know, former club of Damien Duff. They're going down to play Cork City. So there's a few, Talca Rovers are back in there. They would have been in it over the years. So there's quite a few. And then if you look for a first division, maybe shock of beating a Premier team, you've got Treaty against Derry. So I know that was a semi-final a couple of years ago and it sort of went to form. But
I'm familiar with all of these clubs now because I spend my life going to schoolboy games.
Yeah,
so that's
why
I've got this renewed interest in these early round games. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.
We're going to let you go now. We're going to turn our attention to the Ireland-Senegal game. But before we get into that, John, Robbie Keane has rejected, by all accounts, the chance to take on a Middlesbrough job, and he's going to stay with Ferencvaros.
Yeah, we had the story today about lunchtime. We always knew that, you know, Robbie was on a coaching journey. He's been in Israel, been in Hungary, but we certainly didn't expect him to get offered a job, you know, in the top two tiers of England within 6 months of going to Hungary. But he just won the league there. They're in the Champions League. Middlesbrough, he would have an affinity with. He had worked there under Jonathan Woodgate as his assistant from 2019 to 2020 for a year. So apparently Steve Gibson, the owner, was quite impressed with Robbie. approached them over the last 24 hours, and I don't think it took too much pondering to say thanks, but I'm okay where I am.
That's it's an interesting one, because I think people might have thought he would have jumped to the chance to come back.
Yeah, I think he will come back. But it's sick to walk out after 6 months, you know, just down the line. He's only 45.
Yeah. A journey, you said it from the outset.
Yeah, a journey, he's not a journey man. Like, he's mid-40s, so he's not at that stage.
Yeah.
But he will get more offers. And said, like, there's high expectations of Ferencvaros. They are the biggest club in Hungary. So maybe he just wants to have a go with this Champions League campaign at the start of next season and see how that goes. But listen, we don't know. Is he going to be there, you know, this time next year, and unemployed and regretting this? But Michael Carrick, who's a good friend of his, I think, you know, from Tottenham and Leeds, was in the job for 2 years. Yeah. He didn't get playoffs and he gets sacked yesterday. So that's what Middlesbrough expect.
Yeah, it's a cruel game, isn't it? And maybe because Robbie has been out of the eyeline, we don't know a huge amount about his managerial style. Do you know much?
He does a lot of coaching. Yeah, he's very involved. He has Rory Delap there with him as well. But I've heard a bit about him from, you know, a couple of lads that were, you know, around the scene in Hungary, and also when he was with the Ireland camp. Obviously, he was assistant, you know, there for a year or so. So he's very active, but, you know, he's got that experience. He's got my management. He can go and speak to players individually and instill confidence in them. So I think he was always going to be a manager. It's been, you know, quite a slow process since 2018, when he went firstly as initially as a player coach in India to where we are now 7 years later. So, a journey it's on, and I think it won't be necessarily linear.
Isn't it? It's just a different way he's gone about it, because when you look at, like, the Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrards, who maybe went straight into the big jobs and didn't quite work out, and then they had to kind of go back down the ladder again to try and get back up the ladder again, in a way it might just be the right way to go about it.
Yeah, like, he cites this advice that he got from Alex Ferguson, actually, said, you know, don't jump into something just because it's appealing. You've got to look at various factors. You've got to look at the club's history for their patience with managers. You know, what type of budgets they have. Like Middlesbrough, for example, you know, have the Irish player Finn Azaz there at the moment. Are they going to have to sell him? You know, you're going into the club and straight away your best player is being sold. So I don't know if they get into a conversation even about what the budgets are, but there's a multitude of factors there. But so far, you know, apart from that controversy, I suppose, the fallout between Mick McCarthy and Stephen Kenny when he was in the job and then he was out of the job, I suppose he has managed to sort of stay on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll be following his career, that's for sure. You mentioned Rory Delap there, but let's talk about Liam Delap. He has joined Chelsea for an undisclosed fee. So he went from Ipswich Town. A good move for him, do you think?
Not so sure, considering, you know, Chelsea's sort of money ball strategy. Are they just bringing him in, you know, a bit like what they did with the likes of Patrick Bamford a few years ago? Probably keep him around the periphery, may go out on loan, you know, get someone else to pay his wages. I think he had quite a few options. So when you look at their forward line, including Nicholas Jackson, who, you know, we're going to see tomorrow night for Senegal, I don't know whether he's going to get much game time, you know, as it stands. And a player like him, who has worked hard for years going out alone to get a run of games as he did with Ipswich having come up last season, I think it's a bit of a strange choice by him.
Okay, another one we'll be watching that space. Let's turn our attention back, though, to the Republic of Ireland against Senegal. It's on tomorrow night. Let's hear now from Hamer Helgrimson. He was out speaking to the media today.
Has anything surprised you about the week's preparation in terms of some of the new players that have come in?
No, the purpose of bringing in the new players was just to see them and evaluate them. And they have been good, both fitting in the group, been really pleasant to have them, and on training, growing into what we are doing. Obviously, in the beginning, for some, it's a big step, and we could sense they were nervous in the first training. But after that, it's been really positive.
There's rarely friendly games in the international calendar anymore. Every game seems to have a lot on it, you know, be it Nations League points or survival or promotion. And with the World Cup qualifiers coming up so quickly, is there a difference in mindset that you have to consider, you know, when you talk to the players about how to take on these two opponents?
No, for us, it's a limited time I've had and we have had together doing what we are trying to achieve. And the World Cup coming up. September is going to be huge for us, and that's our main objective, is to prepare for September. You obviously always want to win all your games, but it's good that that is maybe not as important as you said before. Most games, national team games, are now official competitive games, so we're lucky that we have two friendlies now, so we can, like we have said before this camp, to give some players a needed rest after a really long season, and hopefully that will give us fresh players in September.
The man alongside you has been named the Player of the Year, the official Player of the Year. Talk to me about his contribution during your time in charge of Ireland.
We have said it in many, many occasions when we sit here. The importance of Robbie was one of the players that finished 3rd of May playing but didn't get the rest off. Yeah, he's first of all a good footballer, but for us, with his experience, his knowledge, his character, his leadership skills, it's really important for us to have a player like him, because we have such a young squad that is lacking the experience we need to play on the big stage. So no, we're really fortunate to have him, and Doc as well, similar age, similar experience. So we all team needs quality players and leaders like him.
I'm sure you've got in your mind your ideal starting 11 for September, but yet you don't know what squad will turn up in September with injuries and whatever. So is this window important for establishing like a plan B contingency, just to make sure that you're not, you know, putting all your eggs in one starting 11?
Yeah, it's important that we have more than 11 players ready and knowing everything about how we want to play. That's why this, and we talked about it before, that we wanted to have a May camp. That was then the purpose, to see if we can add in the knowledge to more players, seeing maybe new faces and a little bit rock the boat. We've been more or less picking this similar squad, so we wanted to add in some new faces, and when we lost out on the May camp, we still opened spots for new players and new faces to come in.
Players like Josh Cullen missing, Finn Azaz missing. What's the instruction then to the players who are stepping in there? You can't say play like Josh, but is it just the system will still be okay, whatever happens, you can just change players in and out, and you have those sort of same similar players that can do similar roles?
Yeah, we would not change our principles of how we play, how we defend, or how we attack. The principles are the same. Obviously, there's different kind of individuals. One player could give us a little bit more in this area, and another one would give us more in that area, and it's always a balance how you set up players, but obviously the principles are the same, and we would like to introduce the principles to as many players as possible. We never know what's going to happen in September, October, November.
Hamer Hill Grimson there speaking ahead of the Ireland-Senegal game, which takes place tomorrow at the Aviva Stadium, an international friendly. He's really looking ahead though to September, John, isn't he? And that's where it's going to be at.
Yeah, it is, because this is sort of the last of an endangered species in terms of friendlies. There's not many of them left with the way the Nations League has mm-hmm. been set up to replace them. And the only reason we're playing friendlies is because we're in a 4-team group. So these are the last two games before the real stuff starts, with the 6 games between September and November. And he's taken this decision to allow his busy championship players, 3 of them mainly, Mikey Johnson, Josh Cullen and Finn Azaz, to take basically the summer off, because he wants them fresh for September. So in terms of, you would have heard it there in terms of the question, we won't see his first 11, I don't think, tomorrow against Senegal, but you will still have the spine of the team. You'll have Queevin in goal, you'll have Nathan Collins, you'll have Evan Ferguson either starting or coming on, you know, probably your 3 most important players for this campaign later in the autumn.
You mentioned Evan Ferguson there. When you look at the way that he sets up, is it a case that he's going to be able to fit in who he wants to up top? Because he does have good options with Parrott, Ida and Ferguson.
Yeah, the 3 of them, you know, initially it was thought that he'd only get 1 in, but in the, you know, the Bulgaria game, the second leg, he managed to play the 2 of them with mm-hmm. Ferguson a bit more withdrawn. So, and then Ida comes on and scores the winner. So it's a good problem to have. I think he's looking at accommodating those 3 in a 2 at various stages of the game in terms of scenario planning. So it's just a case of how sharp Evan is, because he hasn't played much, as we know.
Any developments on his future?
Nah, not immediately, and I don't think there's going to be. I think he's going to get these 2 games. He's apparently training very well. He looks quite lean. You know, I haven't seen him this week. So as we've spoken about numerous times, he's got all the potential and scored a great goal against Bulgaria in March. So,
are these games important for him from a showcase perspective, or does it matter?
No, it does matter. It does matter because, people have. Used to see him as a goal scorer getting the hat-trick against Newcastle and he hasn't done so for a while, so it is, and apparently there's a platoon of scouts coming to the match tomorrow night. Some of them from Europe, obviously they'll be looking at the opposition as well, but as we spoke about last week, I doubt very much he'll be at Brighton at the start of the season, probably out in another loan move, so this is really a showcase for him and some others.
Yeah, it's a big one. I hadn't realised it'd be a platoon of scouts there. So, a little bit of pressure because the season, it just comes back so quickly. So, the time flies by they're coming back earlier all the time. For Creevan Kelleher, though, it'll be a nice occasion for him because he now has that move deal to Brentford secured and, he's the trusted number one now.
Yeah, I'd say it's... It's a relief to him. Mm-hmm. It's just that burden off him. He's finally got stability. He knows where he is. He's got a 5-year contract at Brentford. He's going to start as number one. He's the undisputed number one with Ireland now, the last couple of years, whereas he wasn't when Gavin Bazuna was in form. So he knows where he stands. And I think that this is a very exciting period for Quivian. I think it's great we've got him, moving and staying in the Premier League. Again, he's a bit like a few others, probably a bit like his club mate Nathan Collins. He may not be at Brentford, in a year or two. It's probably a conduit for bigger things. But for now, we're happy to have the two of them playing every game virtually.
Senegal, 19th in the world, and when I look down through the team sheet or the players that have been playing of late with Senegal, it's impressive.
They're the African aristocrats, as we call them. They've got quality and abundance, as you mentioned there. Nicholas Jackson up front and Idrissa Gueye, and you have the Stars, the one at Tottenham, the one at Crystal Palace. They've players from basically all the top leagues in Europe, and they're here sort of on the European tour. They're playing Ireland tomorrow and then playing England on Tuesday. I think this match was originally due to be Saturday, but they wanted to play Friday, so they'd have a bit more lead in time to the England game, which for them would obviously be the big
one. So it's a glamour tie.
Yeah, it is, and a lot of club rivalries there, amongst teammates and things. So, I think it's going to be a great spectacle. Apparently, tickets are going well. They're up over 30,000, for a Friday night in early June isn't bad. So it'll be good for a number of reasons. Primarily because this Ireland team, as you say, really they just have to be fine tuned for September the 6th against Hungary.
A lot of interest in Jonjo Patrick-Finn and whether or not he would be a player that Tal Grimson would include. Do you think we're going to see him?
I would. Anticipate seeing him probably more likely in Luxembourg on Tuesday than tomorrow night. But like you said, he's someone of a skill set that we don't have. He's big, tall, powerful, rangy in his passing, but does lack experience. You have to say that he's played in Spain, played a bit in France this year, but not to any great extent. So the sense I get is that you'll have maybe the likes of Jack Taylor and Will Smallbone will be sort of the main midfielders that will be involved. And with a view to not losing tomorrow, I think that would be important. I know the headline quote today was, "I don't mind losing both friendlies as long as we
win in September."
Yeah, Hungary and Armenia, but it doesn't work that way. You don't want to be going in losing against Luxembourg. Into your
absolutely
first game.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. We've been there before, so I think that's probably just a flipping comment. But there'll be more scope for experimentation, I think, on Tuesday, and lads might pick up injuries tomorrow night, and there could be more opportunities there for the likes of John Patrick Finn.
Okay, and what about Tal Grimson? It's almost a year now since he arrived on the scene. We spoke earlier about Carla Ward's identity within her team. Are we seeing an identity, a clear philosophy, an intent with this Ireland team under Tal Grimson?
Well, we're a bit like Bohemians in the League of Ireland. We don't draw games. We've played 8, won 4, lost 4. So you're guaranteed.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, well, considering Ireland, we're the one-all draw specialist over the years. Maybe we'll go back to that in the qualifiers later in the year. But no, I just think he's very much a fundamental manager. He goes back to basics. And I don't mean in terms of the Trapattoni basically playing six at the back. I just think he saw a lot in the previous regime where just lapses of concentration or maybe being overzealous in terms of getting bodies forward and things like that, just shore things up. And what he did against Bulgaria in March really was beat the teams that he's supposed to beat, which was a lower seeded team. And that's really as a minimum we should be doing, particularly when you're going in playing Armenia now in September. If you get a win against Hungary, even a draw away, then you're starting to enter bonus territory against Portugal. That's what Ireland have been for 30 years, and that's what we really need to get back to. We know we're not, in the top four of the Nations League that you're seeing this week, but we certainly should be doing better than what we have been in previous years.
It's not a nice place to be in when you're not qualifying for major tournaments, John, is it?
No, because next year it'll be a decade, since France Euro 2016, and the World Cup is a lot more difficult. Mm-hmm. Second gets you a playoff, but it gets you a very convoluted playoff. So it's the World Cup is expanding all the time. It's going to go to, to 48 nations eventually. So it's for the public, whether it's the women's or the men's team, I think we need a team at a major tournament, in terms of just getting, the broader interest. Obviously, we were expecting, as you mentioned earlier, the women to be in Switzerland. That's not happening. So, but taking this in terms of its individual assessment, I think we have a chance of being in the top two come whatever it is, the 14th of November. As I said to you last week, I think a lot of things have to go in our favour, particularly keeping our best players fit and maybe getting, some benefit from others not being fit in the opposition. But we could certainly deal with going back to America, 30 years after 1994.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. John Fallon, thank you so much for coming in and setting us up for that game against Senegal tomorrow and all the rest of the news as well. We're going to take a very quick break, but stay with us though. Bernard Jackman is standing by, lots of rugby to talk about.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Bernard Jackman has joined me in studio. Lots of rugby to talk about. Busy week with the Ireland squad named, but then Stuart Lancaster topped it all really then when he was announced as the Connacht head coach. I know you've been speaking about it over the last 24 hours or so, Bernard, but you feel like it's a really good move for everybody.
Yeah, I'm delighted for Stuart because I think he really enjoyed his time in Irish rugby, and it gives him a chance to go in to Connacht and have total control. It was difficult in Paris. The politics over in French rugby are tricky, but particularly Racing 92. So I wouldn't read anything into the fact that it didn't end the way he wanted there. I think he's come over to Connacht with a point to prove. He's, he was announced on Tuesday morning, and already he's been meeting players, meeting coaches, putting plans together for pre-season. And Connacht needed this. Connacht have done an incredible job off the field with a brilliant new training facility up there with any of the top facilities in Europe, a new stand and a revamped stadium to come back to, obviously, 4G pitch that came in last year. But realistically, on the field, it's deteriorated over the last couple of years. They've had a tough season, missed out on the European Champions Cup. They have a lot of really good young players, some ex-Leinster players, the likes of Ben Murphy and Finn Tracy, but also homegrown players as well with the Devine brothers, Gavins and Fords and these type of lads, Dylan Tierney Martin, etc. So Hugh Gavin and I think they're in a good place with the right coach, and I think now they have one.
Yeah, it seems like there's a huge amount of potential there. But just in general in sport, that area, there's always athletes, people who are willing to want to play sport.
100%. And like since Pat Lamb, they kind of haven't had that real leadership from the top. And Stuart will give that. He'll ingrain himself into society there. He'll coach some of the club coaches like he is. Like Leinster missed him. What he did for Leinster was above and beyond what he was paid to do in terms of trying to help young coaches, help young players. And I think this time next spring, if some Leinster players will be very tempted to go down to Connacht to follow him, because they saw the development he did with some of their predecessors and peers.
Yeah, we were speaking with Rebecca Cray and John Fallon about the culture and identity around the men's and women's managers, Carla Ward and Hamerhal Grimson. And you can nearly, it's not even a question you nearly need to ask about Stuart Lancaster. You can almost foresee everything that he's going to do and the culture changes that he'll bring.
Yeah, he's got a real strong sense of what he believes is important, and he's very consistent in that. And probably, to be honest, I don't know a huge amount, but I've heard some things, but probably that consistency in France didn't go down well. They like a manager technique called electroshock, where you know, it's quite chaotic, you know, whereas he is very, very steady, very process driven. And Irish rugby players, I'm not sure about other sports, but Irish rugby players tend to enjoy that and like that and respond well to it. So like the upside for him is obviously get the chance to live in Galway, to build something where there's no massive expectation. There's a lot of hope, but there's not, like, if they don't qualify for Europe next year, it's not the end of the world, as long as they're building towards it, you know, whereas in Racing they wanted to win a top 14 or Champions Cup straight away. But it also means, I think, if the upside, if he does do the job that I think he will, the next time an Irish manager is up for grabs, he'd be in a strong position. So like, it's unbelievable how highly the players in Leinster speak of him. And I know that the Connacht players are excited about him coming down, and that's all you want at the start, and then obviously you got to get into the hard work.
It's such a fascinating career choice, being a head coach like that and moving around, and like, even when you look at Noel McNamara in France and families over there, it's a sacrifice, no doubt, but I'd say it's so rewarding, Bernard.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I mean, like, I'm sure, even though, you know, the Racing 92 project didn't end the way he would have wanted, I'm sure he has unbelievable memories from that. Like, the top 14 is an incredible place to ply your trade. Even Pro D2 is a great place to ply your trade. And coaches like Noel McNamara, Mike Prendergast, James Collin, etc., Rog, obviously, they're getting to experience that. And whether they come back or not, they're getting to, I suppose, stay in the game and give their families, where they have families, an opportunity to experience something different in Ireland. And that's, like, Ireland's a great place to live, but
there's only a few jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it gives them a chance to experience working with a vastly different set of players, a lot of foreign players, a lot of French players, get into that whole identity around French rugby. And yeah, it's great. And Stuart was on the shortlist for the Welsh job, which is going to be announced in the next couple of weeks. He lost out in the last minute to Les Kiss for the Australian job. If he had stayed out of business, out of work, and let his agent, you know, get busy, Stuart would have landed what we perceive to be a big job somewhere around the world. And he's chosen Connacht. I think the RFU deserve massive credit, and I've been critical of the RFU for cuts and in terms of spend, but they definitely got involved here. And it looks like, with Clayton McMillan going into Munster, Stuart going into Connacht, that they're going to invest in coaching. And you know, that's if you're not going to invest in players, in terms of high profile players, or keeping your best players at all times, well, then you got to invest in something else that can have an effect. And I think we've seen that in Munster and Connacht.
Right, it's like, it is so fascinating, because there is only a few really big jobs, and when you look at Ireland, like, there's the Ireland, you know, there's the provinces, and then there's the Ireland head coach job, and when it ever comes up again, no doubt there'll be loads of people vying for it. But Paul O'Connell is the interim head coach at the moment. He has named that 32-man squad for the Georgia and Portugal games. 11 uncapped players. Craig Casey is the captain. It seems like there's going to be a lot of development, but what do you want to see from these games and from what Paul O'Connell does?
It's a funny squad, to be honest. I think two of the form players, John Hodnett and Tom Farrell, have missed out. I feel sorry for Tom Farrell, obviously Munster's player of the year, one of the URC players of the year, and was probably his last chance to get a cap. So that's hard. Because O'Connell or Farrell, whoever's picked it, probably a combination. There's plenty of experience in there, like Stuart McCluskey, etc. And Georgia's going to be tough. I think I know some people involved in Georgian rugby, and they're a little bit upset. The RFU are only the Irish team are only arriving on the Wednesday, and you know, they see that as a bit of a slight against them. They would have loved them to come in on a Monday, like test teams traditionally do, and actually get involved in Tbilisi and be part of it. But yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's an opportunity for some fellas to put their hand up. To be totally honest, I'm struggling to get interested by it. You know, excited by it.
Is that why the squad or the opposition?
It's just Yes, the squad is full of lots of young talent. It's just the Lions is where you want to be focusing this summer. So, but having said that, for guys who are getting an opportunity, you know, this could be the making or breaking of them, because obviously with 15 players in Australia with the British and Irish Lions, they come back, and even if three or four of them retire, they're still, it's going to make it very hard to get another opportunity. And if you look at the teams we're playing in November, that's, you know, high intensity rugby, and Farrell won't be chopping and changing much. So it's really important that they go there, whatever their mindset's like, whether it's disappointment because they didn't go to get picked for Australia, like Sam Prendergast or Jack Crowley, they got to make the most of this tour.
Should Sam Prendergast be taking a break? Is he playing too much rugby?
Yeah, I think he's playing a lot for Leinster, without potentially, when maybe he's just coming on top of a season that's been very challenging for him emotionally. You know, physically, I think they're all fine. Everything gets measured. But, you know, your first season in pro rugby, like properly, and you have the heights and lows that he's had, I think that can take a little bit out of you. Unfortunately for Sam, or maybe fortunately, depends on how it works out, the fact that Leinster need him to try and win a trophy, and the backup to him isn't really locked in. I mean, Ross Byrne was on a bench against Northampton. He hasn't been seen since. Kieran Frawley, he hasn't really set the world alight at 10 this year. He's had some injuries. He's been part of some teams that maybe haven't been full strength. He came on the weekend. He was back on the bench. He came on the weekend, a fullback. So Sam is getting a lot of minutes. And look, it's hard to feel sorry for him when, as a youngster, you normally want minutes. But just at the moment, the last couple of weeks, I just feel he's not as fresh or as sharp as he was earlier on in the year. Whether that's fatigue or whether that's lacking confidence or a combination of both, I'm not sure. But again, you would like to hope that he picks it up now Saturday, that Leinster pick it up and make it easy for him. Like, you know, you have a young 10, you want him to be on the front foot and you want players to be giving him options. But at the week, last week against Scarlets, it just looked very clunky, and just Leinster didn't look anything like they looked 2 months ago, you know. And whether that's down to the fact that they felt they had Scarlets beaten, because they're obviously way more talented than them, or whether it's a real hangover from that Northampton defeat, which, when you add up all the other previous knockout rugby defeats, it's quite a compilation of failures from Leinster against teams that they should have beaten at least one or two of them. So that's the challenge.
Since we're on the topic of identity and looking at the different teams, when you're looking at this Leinster team, is there a confusion about how they're going to play, or maybe is it unpredictable in maybe not the best way when they're going out to the pitch now?
Yeah, look, I think if you're maybe not as talented as some of the other teams, you need to be very agile tactically, right? But when you're Leinster and you have the resources they have, and you've got 23 internationals, you have RG Slime and Jordy Barrett, Rabat Slimani, and 12 current lines and a couple of past ones, three past ones. You kind of can just do what you do, mm-hmm. and have your way of playing and make the others be good enough to beat you. And I think when we watched Leinster from September until just Six Nations, every time I watched Leinster, I was like, well, that's how Leinster play now. People were giving out that it was boring and it was confrontational and it wasn't the Leinster way or some nonsense, but it was basically how Leinster were setting up to play. And then you saw last 16 and quarterfinal in Europe, where obviously Harlequins and Glasgow didn't really pitch, but Leinster played a different way. They tried to be much more expressive in terms of keeping the ball in hand and attacking and playing more offloads and more risk. Then it comes to a halt against Northampton, and since then it's kind of been very mixed. It's very hard. It's not like, I don't see it being a Jack Nienaber team, because it's very clear how he wants to defend. They haven't defended like that, and I don't think it's a Tyler Blindale team either, because they're not attacking like we saw in last 16 and the quarterfinal. So and they could fix it this week, you know, when you've got all this talent. Just maybe simplifying the message can often be all you need. But until we see it on the field, we have to have doubts about where they are in terms of their confidence, in terms of their resilience, in terms of their character. And they're horrible questions to be asking of players that are some of the best in the world. But as a team, when they wear that blue jersey, they too often have fallen short in tight knockout games.
So Glasgow, do you think they're going to trouble them? Like, what happens if Glasgow get a fast start or Leinster won't be able to deal with it?
That is the problem, because Leinster went 12-0 up against Scarlets and then kind of lost their way and had to go to plan B and maybe even plan C, which wouldn't be like them normally. They just kick on. If a team like Glasgow were to go ahead of them, I think it'd be fascinating. Fascinating because the crowd, like we saw it last weekend, a small crowd, there might be a few more there this week, but I think they have doubts. They have lost a little bit of trust in this team. So are they going to turn on the team, or are they going to be as fierce as they would be in the past when everything has gone well? I don't know. This could be the defeat to Northampton could be the defeat that basically breaks up this Leinster team, or not. And that's what the next 80 minutes or 160 minutes will decide. It's unbelievably important for them. For a team that that target Europe more, now you've no choice. You've no choice but to win this, I think.
Nice to have a bit of jeopardy anyway. Yeah. Bernard Jackman, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break. We will be talking to Jeff Shepherd about all things US sports after these.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to US sports because the 2025 NBA Finals are here. Will the Thunder complete one of the greatest NBA seasons of all time, or will the Pacers pull off a major upset? Jeff Shepherd is here to give us his take on things. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, Marie. Before we start talking about that basketball, I do want to say thank you for the shout out last weekend for my boss's cousin who was in town or in the country for a wedding. Don't you just love?
We love love on this program, absolutely. Did they have a good wedding? I was curious.
Yes, they had a great wedding. They made it a week in Port Leash. They got married and it was a beautiful ceremony. And my boss, who's been over there a couple of different times, her parents were actually, I believe, first generation Americans, so her grandparents were, in Ireland still. It was her third or fourth time over there. Absolutely loved it. So, right. What's not to love? Not to love, Marie?
And we got a couple of new listeners. Happy days.
That's
Everybody's
right.
winning.
That's right.
So, Shep, NBA Finals, a bit of a novel pairing.
This is the Middle America Finals here. You don't have the Lakers or the Celtics. You never have the Knicks because the Knicks are never in it. But, you don't have these kind of traditional, kind of coastal power teams. You've got Indiana and Oklahoma City. I mean, they're like it's like a 10-hour drive from each, location. So, but look, you can't argue with it, Marie. I mean, the Thunder, to your point, they've had one of the best seasons, honestly, in the history of the league. I mean, they won 68 games, best record so far. They went 29-1 against the Eastern Conference this season, so it's kind of why, they're like 5-1 favorites. They won 61 games by double digits. So they've just absolutely just destroyed the competition this year. But hey, look, the Pacers have the second best record in the league basically in 2025. So, both of these teams are very good. They're both pretty young. It's not, again, it's not the flash and the cachet of the Lakers and the Celtics. It's just two really good basketball teams, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah, I know that because there's so many games, basketball has lost a few eyeballs over the last few years. What's the interest like in these games?
So I think, once they get started, it's going to depend on, if Oklahoma City comes out tonight and wins this thing by like 25 points, that's not going to be good for the long-term, TV viewership of this series. But I think if the Pacers, they beat Giannis in round one and they beat they beat Cleveland, who was the one seed in the East in round two, and then they beat the Knicks in round three. I mean, if they can keep hanging, make it interesting, maybe steal a game or two, who knows? I think that'll have people watching it. I mean, it is kind of a quiet part of the, American sporting calendar right now. It's really this and the Stanley Cup playoffs that are going on right now. Got some the end of the college sporting season's happening right now with the softball World Series and the baseball series kicking off in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, there's just, we're in that near-dead period, Marie, of like football season's right around the corner, but it's just not here just yet, So, look, I think folks will be watching. I saw an interesting stat that, the Pacers are 5-1 underdogs, okay? So, again, the Thunder overwhelming favorites to win this series. But the last team that was a 5-1 underdog was the 2004 Pistons, and they upset Shaq and Kobe and the Lakers. So it's not like it can't be done, you know?
And what about key matchups?
So, I mean, look, the best player in the league this year, the MVP, was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's the point guard for the Thunder. He was, you know, runaway MVP. And then you've got Tyrese Halliburton, you know, the point guard for the Pacers. I mean, I think those are going to be the guys that are drawing all of the eyeballs. You know, I just think they're going to have the ball in their hands more than anybody else. They're going to take a ton of shots in each game. They're going to set the tone. They're going to set the pace for their teams. Again, everyone, you know, is you know, wisely thinking that the Thunder are going to do this. It'd be their first championship in Oklahoma City. Their franchise won one in the 70s when they were in Seattle. Indiana's never won one. So, I mean, there's that novelty of having a first-time champion, which is, you know, interesting to see, you know, in this day and age. But, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it, you know, how many people watch these games will be dictated by how this first one turns out tonight.
Okay, give us a prediction, Shep.
Oh, I mean, I think you got to go Thunder. And I mean, if it goes longer than five, you know, I think we'll be talking about it next week if that's the case, if it's going longer than five. But I mean, they could have this thing wrapped up in four. There's a lot of money on them sweeping as well.
Cool. Shep, thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing it how it all. That is it from us for this evening. My thanks to all of our guests who came in to join us this evening. I'll be back from 6 p.m. tomorrow to preview the weekend of sport ahead. Up next here on 2FM is the new music show with Rachel May Hannon.